from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Great to be back behind the microphone after a week off. My thanks to Sarah Perry for filling in for me last week. Well, coming up on this Monday edition, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its 20th annual report this morning on Capitol Hill. What is the state of religious freedom around the globe? Are conditions improving or are they worsening? We'll talk about that. What actions can the Congress and the Trump administration take to improve the plight of the persecuted? I'll be joined by former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, who authored the legislation creating the International Religious Freedom Commission 2 decades ago. And speaking of religious freedom, a shooting at a Jewish synagogue in Poway, California, which occurred on the last day of Passover, this past Saturday, has made religiously active Americans increasingly nervous. Houses of worship have traditionally been places of refuge where people are safe. But recent attacks have made many rethink how protected sanctuaries really are. I'll be joined by East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff Sid Gautreau to discuss what churches can do to protect themselves. Also, over the weekend, President Trump was in Wisconsin, where he again called out the Democratic Party for its refusal to care for born-alive babies. The so-called fact-checkers were quick to pounce on the president's statement, saying they were false. Were they false, or were his words just unsettling? We'll talk about it later here on Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. And let me remind you, our End Birthday Abortion campaign continues as we seek to get 218 signatures on the discharge petition so that the Congress can, in fact, vote to end abortions on the day a baby is born. To find out more how you can be a part of that, go to tonyperkins.com. All right. Today, as I mentioned, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its 20th annual report documenting the world's worst violators of religious freedom and making recommendations on how America should respond. Now, in its annual report, the commission unflinchingly describes threats to religious freedom around the world and recommends the State Department countries for designation as what is known as countries of particular concern for engaging in or tolerating systematic, ongoing, egregious violations. Now, in the 235-page report, 16 countries were recommended for countries of particular concern. Designation included 10 that the State Department has also designated as countries of particular concern. There's a second tier of countries that are being watched, that are close to being countries of particular concern. What does all this mean? Are we making progress when it comes to religious freedom around the globe? Here to talk about it, former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, who was the author of the International Religious Freedom Act back in the late 90s and was responsible for the creation in part of this commission. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Tony.
It was good to see you this morning at the release of the report. Let me just start with this before we get into the specifics of this year's report. Are we making progress 20 years later when you saw this threat rising? Are we moving in the right direction?
Yes and no. I think the administration, and by the way, let me thank you for your service, too. I think you're doing a great job, and I think the commission report was very good today. I think the administration is beginning to turn and make some really positive changes. Let me tell you why. The Iraq Christians, the previous administration, all the funding to help the Iraq Christians, and keep in mind, more biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country other than Israel. Abraham was born in Iraq. Daniel lived in Iraq. He's buried in Iraq. Ezekiel's buried in Iraq. Jonah's tomb was blown up by ISIS. So the administration, the Trump-Pence administration, changed the whole policy. The previous administration was given all the aid through the UN. It was not getting to the Christians. It was not getting to the Yazidis. ISIS was expanding. So this administration, one, has defeated ISIS in the Nineveh Plains area. Secondly, the aid is now moving. Every day is a better day for the Christian community there. The Yazidis are still struggling, but the administration and AID is trying to shift that and do some help. So In Iraq, I would say this administration has turned it around in a way that wasn't done before. On individual cases, the work that you did, I know you were with Brunson, but for the president to get out every week to hit the Brunson thing over and over and over. So now, if you're a prisoner in a foreign country, you know this administration is going to stand with you over and over and putting pressure on. Thirdly, ministerial. The ministerial really is a game changer. I think the fact that the president appointed former ambassador, former governor, former senator, former congressman Brownback to be the religious freedom ambassador, this guy cares. I mean, he was the first senator to go to Darfur. He's been on these issues for years. So that, to have a strong person in the State Department to speak out on these issues over and over, is very, very positive. Mark Green has done a great job of AID. And lastly, the ministerial, they're going to have another one in July, is making this kind of something that every country has to deal with. Now they're fighting to come to be invited, and now Ambassador Brownback is putting regional ministerial religious roundtable in Asia, in different parts of the world. So overall, I think the world is bleak for religious freedom, but I think in the last 2 years, the administration has done a pretty good job and is beginning to turn this issue around. Long way to go in China, long way to go in Saudi Arabia, long way to go in other places, but I think there's a light that you can see. They've done a pretty good job.
I want to go to some of those specific countries in just a moment, but I want to underscore for our listeners the ministerial, because not everybody knows exactly what that is. But last year, for the first time, our government, our Secretary of State, called his peers from around the world to gather here in Washington, D.C. to discuss the advancement of religious freedom. It's the first time since the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations that countries gathered together just to talk about advancing religious freedom. That's quite significant, as you pointed out. A second ministerial meeting of these heads of states will take place in July of this year. So they are putting a spotlight on this issue. But when you look at places like China that you just mentioned, you've got the Uyghur Muslims there that are being in somewhere between 800,000 to 2 million are in concentration camps, internment camps, whatever you want to describe them as, re-education camps. They're tracking their movement throughout the country. They're cracking down on all different faiths. It's getting worse in China. So we've got some really dark spots on the globe when it comes to religious freedom.
Oh, we do. China, the Catholic Church is being persecuted. Catholic bishops are missing. Hundreds of Protestant pastors are in jail. Hundreds of Christian lawyers who defend everybody are in jail. To Tibet, there's been cultural genocide in Tibet. Tony, about 140 Tibetan monks and nuns in the last couple of years have poured kerosene on their body. They set themselves aflame. And you're right. The Uyghurs, the Chinese government have Uyghurs in camps that are almost reminiscent of Mao or Stalin or even the Nazis. I had a Uyghur grandmother come by crying. And she said, all of our grandkids are in a detention camp. And so it is very, very bleak with regard to that. Also, these Confucius Institutes that China is putting on American college campuses, there are over 100 college campuses here in the United States that are run by the Chinese government. And Director Ray of the FBI said they are a direct threat to our country. So with regard to China, it's very, very dark. One of the problems, and no one's willing to talk about it, there are so many law firms in this city who represent the Chinese government. I mean, it is a disgrace. During the 80s, Tony, no law firm would have ever represented the Soviet Union. Now the number of law firms, you could go right down the list, A through Z, that are representing China. So China is bleak, and I think Saudi Arabia is bleak. But hopefully the administration is standing up. I mean, the fact that President Trump has taken them on trade, I think once you deal with that trade, you quickly shift. And if we win on that trade, we put them in a position they're going to have to do some things on human rights and religious freedom. But you're right, China's bleak. But we should be picketing the Chinese embassy. We should be picketing these law firms that are represented. There's a lot that can be done that isn't being done.
What do you think it will take to get China's attention? Because, I mean, there's such a huge, I mean, they're a vast economy. We are dependent upon them. We've become dependent upon them for trade. What, and one of my fellow commissioners and a good friend of yours, Gary Bauer, made a very clear statement today about how 20 years ago, and we were talking about giving permanent most favored nation status when it comes to trade to China, we were hoping we would change China. But 20 years later, we've been changed. When you look at what our businesses that are doing commerce with China, they're less concerned about religious freedom than ever before.
They are. I voted against granting MFN. I think that was one of the worst things that the Congress ever did. And the Bush administration really supported it. And it was the Clinton administration who he was against it, and then he switched. There are a couple of things that you could do. One, the Magnitsky Act. The guy who was doing to the Uyghurs is the same guy who did it to the Tibetans. We know his name. We know where he lives. He should be on the Magnitsky Act and over and over and over. And there are many other prominent ones. There are people in the People's Liberation Army that are running a organ harvesting program where they're locking up Falun Gong. They take them into prison. They cut them open. They take their kidneys. We know who some of those people are, and we should be prohibiting them from coming to the United States, prohibiting their children to come to the United States, no medical care to the United States. Their children can't be educated here in the United States. Secondly, Tony, there are companies in the West that are aiding the Chinese, and I think there should be a suit. You remember Harry Wu brought a suit against a couple of companies. We should sue some of these companies. There are companies that are aiding. There was one prominent American company, I won't mention the name, who is aiding the Chinese with regard to DNA material, with regard to the Uyghurs, and with regard to the Falun Gong. Those companies should be sued. There should be suits. You remember history. Western companies helped the Nazi Germanys, and many said they're sorry when the war was over. Companies like that should be named, and we should go after them. Thirdly, how can a law firm in this city take money from the Chinese government? Before the Chinese ambassador comes up to talk to any Hill, he'll go and call these law firms and say, tell me what congressman, what Senator X is. And there are some former members of Congress, I hate to say it, that are out working for these law firms. There is a lot that could be done. If there were the guts and the initiative, they could be done.
Well, I would think you would agree, as you mentioned earlier, Congressman Wolf, that probably we have more people in positions right now that care about this issue with great passion than ever before when you look
we
at
do.
This administration. And if there was ever a time to do something, it's now.
It is now. And you have the vice president who's been great. I mean, the vice president single-handedly literally changed the policy with regard to the Christians in Iraq. President Trump spoke out forcefully when Buhari came to the White House, the president of Nigeria, advocating for Christians. So you got a team there, and I think this is the time to do it.
Well, Congressman Wolf, thank you again for all of the foundation and groundwork that you did to bring us to this point. I hope that we will make the most of this moment when it comes to religious freedom around the world.
Thank you, and thank the supporters of FRC. It's money well spent. God bless you.
All right, Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia. We're going to talk more about the USERF's report tomorrow. We'll have Senator Lindsey Graham, also one of our fellow commissioners, Gail Manchin. We'll be talking more about some of these other countries, some in particular that we designate, the State Department, but does not. When we come back, religious freedom here at home and the safety in our churches. That's next.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com. As I said, we're going to talk more about the USERF report tomorrow. But one of the recommendations that was in this year's report, which actually I had inserted after traveling to Egypt and a couple of other countries, was the need for security, for the United States to train foreign police officers to provide protection, to secure houses of worship. Now, there's a program, which I actually used to be a part of, the Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program with the State Department. I was a contractor with them, providing training to secure vital installations. Well, we're simply recommending they expand that because of now churches being soft targets, churches, synagogues, mosques, being soft targets for terrorists, that we begin to help those foreign governments secure those. Well, you know, here it is in the United States. We've got this growing threat to houses of worship. Just this weekend, another shooting in Poway, California, just outside of San Diego. A synagogue, last day of Passover on Saturday. It's being described as a possible hate crime. It's the second shooting and killing in a synagogue in 6 months. One 60-year-old woman was shot and killed as she jumped in front of the rabbi, who was also wounded. Of course, there was actually an attack in my home state of Louisiana earlier this month. Three black churches have been burned within a period of about 10 days in one Louisiana parish. Of course, in 2017 in Texas, in November, there was a gunman that killed 26 and injured another 20. 2 years before that, in Charleston, South Carolina, we remember that shooting at the African Methodist Episcopal Church, where nine people were killed, including the senior pastor, during a prayer service. So there's a growing threat to these houses of worship. What's behind it? What can be done? Joining me to talk about this is Sheriff Sid Gautreaux. He is the sheriff in East Baton Rouge Parish. And Sheriff, welcome back. You've been on the program before. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
You know, we've had these conversations a number of times, both on and off the air, but we're seeing this growing threat to houses of worship all across the United States, and it's troubling, it's concerning, but it's a reality. And what can be done to ensure that when people go into a house of worship, a sanctuary, that they don't have to have a fear that they may not come out?
Well, and you're exactly right. I was listening to all the things you named off, and you know, I mean, that's exactly what they are. They're places of worship, they're places of fellowship, and they are sanctuaries, and, you know, they welcome strangers in. And this growing threat, and it is growing. I mean, I know you mentioned about we had church bombings way back in the 60s in the United States, but and we've had others since then, but this is just getting alarming rate of what we're seeing, not only in the United States, but across the world. And I can tell you what we do here in East Baton Rouge Parish. And, you know, I've been contacted by a number of our pastors, and we reach out to them as well. You know, churches, if you stop and think about it, are really soft targets. And, mm-hmm. you know, we need to do everything we can to try to not harden those targets where they become not an environment of God and of worship, but to just, you know, put some safeguards in place to try to keep these things from happening, or at least if they do happen, to respond to them in a quicker and better manner and try to save lives. But, you know, I've been in law enforcement for 42 years, and I've never ever thought about carrying my weapon in a church of worship, and I haven't. But I've had to rethink that, and several of us in law enforcement, we had this conversation last week. You know, we've rethought that. You know, you're not nowhere are you safe from these events taking place, the possibility of them. But we're working with pastors here, and what we do, we'll go out to the church, and you know, one of the biggest questions they have is, should I arm my parishioners or my churchgoers? What should I do? My congregation, should I arm them? And you know, what I start out is telling them, you know, just arming someone is not going to be the answer if that person is not proficient in using that. And what we try to do is to, you know, like I tell all of these pastors that I've talked to, you know, you've got some members of your congregation who are current law enforcement officers or who are retired law enforcement officers. And to me, that's the first people that they ought to look for to be involved in securing their church. And, you know, then every church has a good amount of ushers. You know, the larger the church, the more you have. And we go out and do security checks, and we tell them where they're most vulnerable, you know, where they might want to install cameras, and, you know, give them a protocol on if they've got somebody that they need to keep an eye on, how to do that without, you know, alarming a bunch of people or, you know, and how to respond to those individuals. We had some guy that came in one of our churches not too long ago, and he just, you know, we could tell he looked like he was homeless, but he went down in front and he just started chanting and saying things that, you know, didn't make sense. And they were able to get him out without any incident. And fortunately, he wasn't armed or anything. But, you know, the people that are in the churches need to know what to look for and how to react to it. And you know, it's like I told them, if you want to arm some of your people, as you know, in Louisiana, we have a concealed carry law, and you have to go through the state police to get it. They do background checks, and you have to go through firearms training and so forth to pass that. But, you know, we try to identify as many law enforcement officers going to that church or retired, whether they retired or current, that, you know, at least you know who they are and they know who the people in
right.
there work.
And a lot of it is just that relationship with law enforcement and the churches, and that's why I would encourage pastors to reach out to your local sheriff. They're eager, as I know you have been, Sid, to help. Sid, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more after this.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. Okay, over the weekend, President Trump spoke to a jam-packed stadium in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And once again, he underscored the importance of protecting babies who were born alive after a failed attempt on their life via abortion. Now, I got a couple of clips I want you to hear, and then we're going to talk about the fact checkers that were quick to pounce on the president's statement. Play clip number one.
They are aggressively pushing extreme late-term abortion, allowing children to be ripped from their mother's womb right up until the moment of birth. Your Democrat governor here in Wisconsin shockingly stated that he will veto legislation that protects Wisconsin babies born alive, born alive. The baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. I don't think so. Incredible.
Now, the president, in that statement, making reference to a couple of things. One, the Virginia governor, Governor Northam, that, you know, is the one who on radio discussed what he would do as a former doctor who did this, consult with the parent and decide what to do with the baby. Now, the fact checkers quickly jumped on the president. Quote, and I'm quoting from CNN, Trump's claim that mothers and doctors are permitted to execute a baby after it leaves the womb is incorrect. The bill he referred to would mandate that health professionals do all they could to keep a baby alive if it was born alive and would penalize anyone who let a baby die. Well, first off, okay, whether you actively take the baby's life or you leave it there, refusing to give care to it and allowing it to die, the baby's dead. Now, for those that say this would never happen, that this wouldn't happen, Kermit Gosnell, Philadelphia, who literally executed babies, snipping, as he would call it, the spinal cord. Well, they go on then in this to claim, in this article, in the fact-checking, by the way, saying that, and they're quoting from Dr. Barbara Levy, Vice President of Health and Policy at the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Quote, abortion later in pregnancy is not used as an alternative to delivering healthy women's full-term viable pregnancy, she said. Continuing, additionally, it is callous to suggest that healthy women with viable pregnancies at term abruptly change their minds and seek abortion care as the solution. So they're saying that this doesn't actually happen. Well, the reality is that it does happen, and they're providing no facts to say that it doesn't happen, that somehow the president is incorrect, that his facts are incorrect. They may not like his word choice, but they cannot argue with the fact that it happens. In fact, when you look at the numbers, the CDC only tracking about six states actually records that this does happen. That there are babies who are born alive and then are left to die. So if it's not, as the Democrats would say, this doesn't happen. It's not a problem. It doesn't happen. We don't need to be dealing with it. Well, okay, well, if it doesn't happen, just go ahead and pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivor Protection Act, and we're finished. It doesn't matter. If it's in place, if it doesn't happen, then what harm is it in having a piece of legislation that says it is illegal to do this? I want you to hear the second clip of what the president calls for as the solution.
So to protect innocent life, I called on Congress to immediately pass legislation prohibiting the extreme late-term abortion of babies. So Democrats are now the party of high taxes, high crime, open borders, late-term abortion, hoaxes, and delusions. The Republican Party is the party for all Americans. That's what it is. It really is. And common sense. We're the party of common sense. We're the party of the American worker, the American family, the American dream.
So the president is calling for Congress to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Nancy Pelosi blocking it. That's why we're working to get the 218 signatures required to get the discharge petition. All right, on the other side of this break, I want to continue this conversation. Then we're going to go to the phones here in just a moment. But there were, according to the CDC, in just the six states that report on this, 143 babies over about a 10-year period that were left to die. It does happen. I mean, that's just six states out of 50. I also want to talk about the contrast between the two parties. Never has there been a clearer contrast on an issue than on this issue of life. We'll talk about that next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, let me remind you, those that might be interested, July the 7th through the 14th, you can join us on an Alaskan cruise, a vacation you won't forget. Great scenery, great fellowship. We'll have a number of the FRC team will be with me. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, General Jerry Boykin, Ken Blackwell, and some others. It's a great time. As I said, beautiful scenery, great fellowship. You get a kind of behind-the-scenes look at what's happening in Washington, D.C., and literally around the world. To find out more about how you can be a part of that and join us, go to tonyperkins.com and follow the links over to the Alaskan cruise. Okay, I want to go back to this issue of abortion. This is a really big deal. This is a defining moment for our nation where, you know, this really is not abortion. I mean, this is infanticide. This is murder. This is murdering born children, allowing them to die. You know, the president says execute. They say that doesn't happen, that they just be forced to give care. Well, that's what medical people are supposed to do, give care. Someone is born alive. They should get aid. Now, this is a line I think that once we cross, I mean, there's a coarsening that takes place that, quite frankly, I'm not sure we come back from. I think abortion has left a scourge on the nation. And by the way, when you listen to the president and his terminology, and this goes back to the third debate in Las Vegas, third presidential debate between him and Hillary Clinton, and I was there. It was at that point that I realized that he really understood this issue of abortion in a way that I've never heard another politician talk about. And I've had conversations with the president in private, and the terms that he uses in these speeches, it's his words. I know this because he says it in private. And I know also that these are not the type of words that a speechwriter would put into a speech. These are not politically correct terms. And that's why I know they're his words. It's like, you know, for however many years he was in business, you know, doing business deals in New York, building buildings around the world, getting building permits. You know, I don't think he ever thought about this, quite frankly. But I've seen this on a couple of things. When it's brought to his attention and he sees it now through the lenses, a different lens as President of the United States that helps set and shape policy for our country and the moral climate of this nation, he looks at it a different way. And it's like for the first time, he says, what? This is happening? We're doing this? And he speaks of it in those terms. And so I think that the president, I made this statement yesterday, I was preaching at a church. And I said, I never thought I would live to see the day when we have a president of the United States that speaks with more passion and with more urgency about the atrocities and the scourge of abortion than many pastors in our nation speak with. And I'm grateful for it, that he gets it. And he's speaking out as he does. Now, there has never been, as I was mentioning before the break, a more defined contrast between the two major parties on this issue of abortion. Now, I'm going to go back. You hear me make reference to this a lot, but I think it's very instructive, the two-party platforms. Now, a lot of people don't pay attention to these platforms, but I'm going to tell you, you should pay attention to them. And this is something you should share with your friends and neighbors. This is something that can be talked about in, you know, when election time rolls around. Policies matter. Churches should be speaking on this. In fact, we had resources for churches to use. So you're not talking about candidates. You're not talking about candidates. You're not talking about elections. You're talking about the party platforms. And here's why they matter. A 30-year study of the party platforms revealed that the Republican Party follows their platform 89% of the time. The Democrats, not as much, but about three-quarters of the time, 74% of the time, they adhere to their party platform. I guess it's good that they don't do it 100% because their platforms are so bad. But on the pro-life issue, let's talk about the issue of life. Democrats say they will continue to oppose and seek to overturn federal and state laws and policies that impede, and I'm quoting from the platform, a woman's access to abortion. We believe unequivocally that every woman should have access to quality reproductive health care services, including safe and legal abortions, regardless of where she lives, how much money she makes, or how she is insured. End quote. Well, used to be safe, legal, and rare, but they don't care about the rare anymore. And doesn't matter how much she makes because they're going to make you pay for it. And I know that because in their party platform, they also call for the repealing of the Hyde Amendment to allow or force the government to fund abortion on demand. Now, the Republicans oppose the Democrats' extremism directly. As a quote, quoting from the Republican platform, as Democrats abandon this four-decade-old bipartisan consensus, we call for codification of the Hyde Amendment and its application across the government, including Obamacare, end quote. Republicans also will, quote, not fund or subsidize health care that includes abortion coverage. Now, let's go back to the overall issue of abortion. In the Republican Party platform, the 2016, the last platform, still in existence, is arguably the most pro-life platform in the history of the party. It states in unequivocal terms that the Democratic Party is extreme on abortion because of their opposition to simple abortion clinic safety procedures, support for taxpayer-funded abortion, and rejection of pregnancy resource centers that provide abortion alternatives. The old Clinton cry that we said earlier of safe, legal, and rare has been reduced to just legal. We are proud to be the party that protects human life and offers real solution for women, end quote. The platform, the Republican Party platform, goes on to applaud the U.S. House for passing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Now, that's the earlier act that had no teeth in it, declaring we strongly oppose infanticide. It also supports a human life amendment to the Constitution, abortion clinic regulations, federal and state bans on abortion at 20 weeks when preborn babies can feel pain. bans on abortion based on sex or disability, and bans on the cruelest forms of abortion, especially dismemberment abortion procedures in which unborn children are literally torn apart limb for limb. Calls for a ban on human cloning and the creation or experimentation on human embryos for research, and also applauds Congress for banning research involving three-parent embryos. Of course, it also goes on to speak about Planned Parenthood. Republicans want to defund it. Democrats want more of your money to go to it. So the president, he's speaking the truth. Now, he's using terms that make the left uncomfortable. But the effect of, in particular, in Wisconsin, where the Democratic governor there, Governor Tony Evers, is going to veto, or I may have done by now, I don't know, a what they called Republican-backed bill that would be a state version of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And he was going to veto it. Now, whether or not you take the life of an unborn child or a child that is born or you let them die, as I said earlier, the end result is the same. The baby is dead. They may not like the president's terminology, but what he describes as the outcome of what the left is pursuing is true. And this is a defining moment for America. We are working diligently to get the signatures needed to get this discharge petition onto the House floor. Now, this discharge petition will be active until it has the 218 signatures or until the end of the 116th Congress. Now, we need your help on this. We need you to contact your member of Congress and make sure they have signed this discharge petition. Now, I think all the Republicans have signed. We have about four or five Democrats that have signed so far. So it's especially important if you have a Democratic member of Congress. And I would encourage you to call them. You can call the Capitol switchboard, which is 202-224-3121, and just ask them, have you signed the Scalise discharge petition on the Born Alive bill? Steve Scalise is the main author of the discharge petition. He's the minority whip in the House. That's 202-224-3121. And just ask your member of Congress, have you signed the discharge petition on the Born Alive bill? You can also help us. We are about halfway to the 90,000 thermal baby hats. You know, the little pink and blue baby hats that are on to a newborn's head. Well, Nancy seemed to hear the importance of this, so we're going to show her. We're going to deliver 90,000 of these baby hats on Capitol Hill. And you can help us. You can help purchase one of those hats and help spread this message. Go to TonyPerkins.com. It's right there at the top of the page. Just click on it. It shows you how you can be a part of it. For $9, you can buy a hat and help us spread the message that we need to draw the line right here. We'll go no further. We will not be a nation that allows infanticide. We'll not allow the murder of children that have been born. And then we're going to work our way back. And we're going to see America become a pro-life nation again. That's why the battles are so intense. That's why they oppose the president on every move he makes. And just wait until there's another Supreme Court vacancy, and it will happen. And this is why elections matter. It's why you've got to be informed. You've got to be engaged. You've got to be voting. You've got to be sharing this information with your friends. And we have lots of information at our website, a lot of information on the life issue and what's happening. And so I encourage you to make use of those resources, share it with your friends. Maybe you need to start a culture impact team in your church that you can help get other people involved and engage. You can find all that at frc.org. Go to TonyPerkins.org and TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Let me go back before we run out of time. I talked a little bit longer than I had anticipated. But I want to go back to some practical steps on this previous topic that we had discussed. I didn't get a chance to get into it with the sheriff over the security of churches. But this is this too is an important issue because you want, especially pastors, church leaders, you want to make sure that your congregation, they're safe and that visitors feel safe. And there's some very practical things that you need to do. Number one, just realize that this can't happen. And you, as I mentioned, you should reach out to the local sheriff. Sheriffs are really good about this. More the elected officials. Whether you've got elected chief, they might be more attuned to this. But elected sheriffs are really good. Sheriffs, if you call them, a lot of them have resource officers that will come out and take a look at your church facility, might make some recommendations. There are some a number of retired law enforcement officers that have training sessions. They can come in and do training for your security team. But you can't ignore this problem any longer. Some of it's just having ushers there and a presence. That's enough to deter. There's multiple levels of deterrence that you can take, and it's not costly. It's just a matter of focus and spending the time and the energy to look at it. So I encourage you to do that. I believe we have a resource. I know we don't have it up on the website today because I didn't call for it. But we have I believe we've developed a resource for churches to help them deal with this, prepare for it. And so I'll get that up on the website for later today or tomorrow as a resource for churches. But don't ignore the issue. You need to make sure, number one, know that, you know, we're living in a day and an age where evil is unhinged, and what were once safe places no longer are. Doesn't mean we shouldn't go there. Just means we have to have our eyes open and be prepared. That's the times in which we're living. Challenging times, but times of great opportunity. And I think part of that is we see, you know, the gospel, we see the doors opening around the world, but at the same time we see churches being targeted more than ever. It almost seems like, our spiritual enemy is desperate. And we need to be wise about that. We need to be praying. We need to be praying for the safety of our churches, safety of believers, and we need to work to keep all people of all faith safe. We don't want people to be driven from places of worship. And I think part of this is it goes back to the marginalization of faith and religion, driven by some in government and by the media and the culture at large, the popular culture that has really stigmatized religion and made people of faith a target in many ways. And I think we need to hold those folks that do that accountable. And when it happens, we need to call them out for that and not tolerate the marginalization of people of faith and Christians in particular here in this country and in all people. We shouldn't tolerate it. Not here, not anywhere. All right, folks. Music means we're out of time. I want to encourage you to join us again tomorrow. We're going to be discussing a little bit more the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, their report, the findings and recommendations, and much more. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.